Hi everyone, welcome to Sexual Predators, and I'm your host, Kathy Cassidy. I'm a clinical forensic therapist. Today's story is going to be a little twisty, so I'm going to ask you to hang on to a few things so it makes sense. This true crime story actually happened to me, was a personal, professional experience. It was a blend of both. And this was after I worked in the jails and prisons. I moved to a new state and opened up a new office where I shared different office spaces with people of many different professions. And I'm not sure if you guys are familiar, I'm sure you all are, with LinkedIn. So keep in your pocket a few things. New state, new office. I was on LinkedIn, and I had been on LinkedIn for a long time, so I had a lot of contacts on there from the years. And of course, as you guys know, most, you know, you don't really know these people at all. So one day, living in my new state with my new practice, I got a LinkedIn request. And I just kind of, you know, grazed over it and saw that it was someone who worked in my field. He was a social worker, and he was in the same state as me. And for myself, being new to the area, I was happy to accept the request to connect because this was good for me to network in the new state. I didn't think much of it because I would carelessly accept LinkedIn requests. And I don't know if other people do that. I'm assuming by the amount of connections most people have that you don't really like Google search everybody. So, okay. So I accept it. Pocket that. Remember, I accept this guy's request. Well, wait, don't pocket it yet. Shortly after the request, he sends me a message and says, you know, I'm interested in the work you've done with sex offenders and the prisons. Remember, he's a social worker. I would love to know more about it. And I said, and I did respond because I was building my network. And I said, oh, yeah, it was very interesting work and I really loved it. That was it. Then he responded again and said, maybe we could meet for coffee one day. And then I stopped responding because I just didn't feel like it was appropriate, really, when I didn't want to. I don't really know the reason. I kind of felt like the little dating feel to it. I don't know, and I didn't like it. So I just stopped responding. Okay, now you're going to pocket that. Fast forward, I don't know how long, maybe a week or two. And I used to advertise on Psychology Today, which is a website for people looking for therapists. And all the therapists that subscribe have their picture, a profile about like their education, their work history, and kind of a little get to know you clip so that if people are interested in you, they would send you an email to find out if they could schedule an appointment or get more information. So say a week or two later, I get an email from Psychology Today from a person requesting a new appointment with me. It would be a brand new client. So I schedule the client, or I tried to schedule the client. It was a man, and he specifically wanted a Friday evening. Now, coming from working where I had already worked in the prisons and jails and being raised in Chicago, I was not going to schedule a male client in the evening alone on a Friday night after the office closed. So I didn't say that to him, but I just said I didn't have office hours at that time. So then he asked if we could do it on a Saturday, which the building that I was renting the new place from, the staff wasn't there on Saturdays, so I wasn't really comfortable with it, but I was trying to build my practice in this new place, so I agreed. And I did not have a good feeling about this at all. And God, you guys, always trust your gut. I really didn't like meeting a new client alone. I wish I would have listened to myself, but the things we do to try to build our business, well, within reason, of course. So it's Saturday morning, maybe, I don't know, 10, 11 o'clock. And I had a client before that client that I already knew. And then I walked that client out of the office to the main lobby. And the new client, the man, was already inside. Now, this was, the building was locked on Saturdays. So he said, oh, I'm so-and-so, and I'm here for my appointment. And I was like, oh, hi. You know, I was very surprised and like, how did you get in? And he said, oh, somebody let me in that was coming out. And I was like, oh, okay. So we walked back to my office. Now, I did forget one part. He did mention when he was scheduling the appointment, he knew that I worked with sex offenders and that he mentioned that he wanted to work on some sexual issues. And he didn't go further, and I didn't press him for that because that would be not something I would normally do. At least at that time. So you live and learn. So we go back to the office. We start talking about his issues with his wife, the sexual issues that he was having. And he did specify that it was in regards to his marriage. So he is telling me that led to him getting into this very dark spiral of his history, his sexual history. And he said that he was, he did admit to some really graphic, very violent sexual history of raping young girls when he was also young. So we talked about it. Now, in my profession and from working with sex offenders, specifically the men, you do start getting a certain intuition when they are describing their crimes, their sex crimes or sexual deviance in a way that's therapeutic, and they're trying to explain it and get help for it. And then there's a small percentage that you get this feeling, and it's definitely almost always right, that they're telling you their sex crimes in a way where they're really like getting off on it sexually. They're really enjoying it. And some of them enjoy it because they like to shock people, they like to scare people, they find it sexually stimulating. There's a variety of reasons why some of the offenders enjoy doing that. So I was definitely getting the feeling this guy is telling me, because sex offenders, unless they're really like forced almost like through the court system or there's something to gain from it, they really don't just offer up all the gory details of what they've done. And so to have someone come in to the office not mandated by the court and just saying these really horrible things that he had done to another person, of course, I mean, not of course, they were the same age, but the crime was really just pretty brutal. And I just felt bad. I had this very bad feeling that this was going south real quick. And the first thing that went into my brain after that was, I'm alone in the office, in the whole building, not just my little office, the whole building. There's nobody works on Saturday. And what a dumb idiot I am for scheduling this. So now I'm not concentrating anymore, really, because I am feeling this fear factor coming through me. So I tell the client, listen, this is starting to go in a direction that's not really appropriate. So we're going to need to stop here. And he did completely comply with that. I don't like that word. It sounds like I was ordering him. He did cooperate with that. He was as calm as a cucumber, just laid back, relaxed, just enjoying the day, talking about his rape. So he said, he mentioned something about work. his type of work, and he said, oh yeah, you know, I'm a social worker too. Oh yes, he said, I'm a social worker too, so I'm worried you would report this, but it was a long time ago, so I don't think it's reportable. And I said, well, I'm not a social worker. It's a different license, but we're in the same field. And I'm like, of course you cannot show any of your true personal emotion, but I'm like blown away that this guy is in the mental health field. And then proceeds to tell me that he works with kids from like the foster care population and how much he loves it. And I'm just going, this guy, more than likely, I hope you guys don't jump down my throat, but this is just from past experiences with offenders. He is more than likely using his work and went into that field to prey on children, because he did talk about the sexual deviance with his wife, and it was very dark, and he was essentially sexually assaulting her on a regular basis and drugging her. So he has not, most offenders don't outgrow it. It's not usually a phase. And he definitely was still offending even though he was married. So I'm sitting here just pretty mortified, going, what am I going to do? Like, what is my plan of action? Because this guy is telling me these things for a reason. And so I said, well, you know, our session was coming to an end, and I definitely was not going to reschedule him, and I wasn't going to tell him that in that moment. So I kind of started wrapping things up, and I said, I really don't even think I was one bit therapeutic, because I was just having a bad feeling from pretty early on in the session. And so as we're wrapping up, he says, you know, I'm surprised you don't remember me. And I was like, how would I remember you? And in my brain, I'm thinking, my God, do I know this guy? And I don't really know anybody in this state. How in the world, you know? And I'm trying to like track through my memory file, who is he? And I'm like, how would I, so I did say, I just said, like, how would I remember you from where? And he's like, from LinkedIn. And I was like, from LinkedIn? No, I don't remember. He's like, yeah, I sent you a request to connect a few weeks ago, and I asked you to go to coffee. And I was like, oh, my dear Jesus Lord. You'll hear me say that. I'm always talking to Jesus, because I immediately remembered the coffee thing, because I kind of, like I said, was a little irritated. And I don't even know why I was irritated by that, but I was. And I'm like, holy, holy, this is the guy from LinkedIn? What? And I'm thinking so fast. I'm trying to like process all of this while my blood is going a little bit numb. Like LinkedIn, he contacted me on Psychology Today. So we stand up, and I was like, oh, yeah, you know, yeah, I remember you. Trying to kind of like play it really cool. We're getting up, and he's like, yeah, my office is right next door to yours. And I'm like, what? Where's your office? And of course, I'm being normal. And so we opened my office door. His office door was literally 5 steps from my office door. And I was like, holy moly, this guy, he's right here. So I was like, okay, well, you know, he showed me his office. He opened the door and offered for me to come in. And of course, I absolutely did not. I was packed up, ready to go. And I said, oh, yeah, it looks really nice. I didn't go in. And I said, I'll contact you for the next session, and we'll talk about it then. Okay, so now I'm ready to fall all the way apart. My bones feel like they're turning into complete mush, because I don't know what the hell I have going on right now. So I parked in the back where all the employees parked. So I said, are you parked back here, since he has an office here? He's like, no, I parked in the front. So I'm thinking, like, why did this guy, he works here, his office is here. That was all like flooding my brain. He parked in the front, pretended to be a client, and came in and lied to me and told me that someone let him in, when in fact he used his freaking key to get in because he worked in the same place. So I'm trying to drive home, like, just trying to process all of this. So as soon as I get home, I go straight to my computer and start looking through my LinkedIn and trying to track the date that he contacted me. And how did I not remember that name from Psychology Today? Not that that's not really that unusual, because like I said, you accept these connections so easily. So I start comparing the names and the emails, and this guy used two different emails and pretended to be two different people when he scheduled the appointment on Psychology Today. So after I declined the charming offer on LinkedIn for coffee, he came again through Psychology Today through a different email and contacted me. So I did call the police. I was really pretty terrified. I found out, I also called the office manager that I rented the space from and told her what happened and asked her if she knew anything. She was nice enough. She was very nice. She pulled the camera footage. Turned out that this guy had been stalking me since I moved in the building, which was not that long. And she saw him on the cameras coming in on Saturdays, the day that I would work, but when the office people weren't there, she could see him come in before me. I guess he was tracking my time, and he would go in his office and shut off his light and probably was just creeping there, just listening to me. He got my name from my door because I had my name on the plaque on the door, and that's how he found me on LinkedIn. And that's how he found me, went on Psychology Today. And that's how he was sitting right in front of me. God knows what this guy was planning. So the police, you know, I told them what happened. They told me what to do, which was to get a restraining order. And I did do that because it was a Saturday. So I did that on Monday. Between Saturday and Monday, this guy texted my phone. Probably, I think it was like starting at 5 a.m. on Sunday and Monday morning, and was really, really pushing and demanding. And I just chose not to interact with him at all because I knew I was getting the restraining order. So I did go to court. I did get the restraining order. I was terrified of, I didn't, once we realized from the cameras that he had been watching me for so long, I didn't know if he followed me and knew where I lived. I had no idea. So this is, you know, coming from someone who really is supposed to be aware of these things. You know, the biggest thing I can always tell myself is never get complacent. I don't know if how I could have redone that, how I would have ever known. Like, I do look at that and reflect, like, could I have done something different? Yes, I could have followed my instinct. But so I had the restraining order. That was, I think, 30 days. Then we had a court date. And I went to court. I had everything printed out of all the fake, you know, email addresses and any evidence that I had. Went to court. The fact that this guy was also in my field was doubly disturbing. And, you know, pled my case to the judge, told everything. She scolded him pretty bad verbally. But that was it. She literally did not continue the restraining order. The licensing board did nothing. I reported him to his board, and he went on to continue practicing. So it was just unbelievable. I'm very grateful that nothing happened to me physically. You know, and oh yeah, I was starting to say before, the office manager was great. She moved me, her and her whatever staff she had, they moved my office that night to another location that they had to get me away from him, because they technically couldn't kick him out of his lease, even though he was like an almost raper killer. So that's my personal experience. That was really scary. And oh goodness. Hope you guys got something from this story. Entertainment, fear, learn something. But that's what I went through. And I definitely have tailored my practice ever since that experience. This was several years ago. All right, you guys. Thanks for listening. And share this with anyone you think would find it interesting or helpful. Bye.